All those years of fake coffee and piss trickle showers. Maybe. And maybe it was a damn good thing she wasn't responsible for world order, just murder in New York. And, she decided, if her thoughts could wind around all that, she was definitely awake. 10 minutes later, feeling human again, she came out wrapped in a robe, noted Rourke had 2 covered plates and a pot of coffee on the table. The man, as he'd proven countless times in countless ways, worked fast. He lowered the tablet, closed it in a way that had her cop senses quivering just a little. "What's on the tablet?" she asked as she walked over to join him. "My tablet? Many things." She just twirled a finger, poured more coffee. "Let's see it, pal." "It might be a lewd photo from my lover, Angelique." "Yeah, yeah. We'll frame it with the ones from my lovers, Julio and Raul, the twins. Meanwhile..." Stalling, he lifted the covers from the plates, distracting her for a moment. Oatmeal. She should have known. At least he'd surrounded the bowl with some bacon, a scoop of scrambled eggs that looked cheesy, and there was a dish of berries, another of brown sugar, the real thing. But still, this should start us both off well for the day. Your day started a couple hours ago, easy. Not my day with you. Uh-huh. She went for the bacon first, saw Galahad's whiskers twitch, and he strolled, as if just out for a little exercise, toward the table. Tablet. First, Rourke gave the cat a look that had Galahad sitting down to vigorously wash. "Charmaine sent me the draft of a design for the bedroom late last night, it seems, when we were otherwise occupied. She just wants to know if she's going in the right direction. I didn't think you'd want to see something this early on, or want to think about it." Eve just twirled her finger again as she added heaps of brown sugar, heaps of berries to the oatmeal. "I'll put it on the wall screen." Rourke swiped the tablet. The strange scrolling symbols faded to the design. Eve ate, frowned at it. "First, those curtain things, they're too fussy, too, I don't know, regal or something."
"I agree."
"I guess I mostly like the way she's got this area here laid out. The couch is roomier, but it's too ornate. I've actually seen a piece in the Sotheby's catalog I like. I'll send it to both of you and see." "And the bed itself?" Ornate was the word there, too. And massive, with its 4 tall and burly posts, and both the high headboard and the long footboard edged with the frame carved with Celtic symbols. All dark, rich, glossy wood that looked old and important. Still,
if you don't like it, that's the thing. I do. A lot. I don't know why. It's not simple, and I figured I'd talk you into simple, but I don't usually care about stuff like this, but man, that's a hell of a bed. Where did she find it?
I found it, months ago. It's in storage, as I bought it on impulse, then realized you'd more likely want the simple. As she continued to study it, he picked up his coffee. "There's a story with it, if you want to hear it."
"Let's hear it."
"Well then, there was an Irishman of some wealth and station who had this built as his marriage bed, though he had yet to find his bride. An optimist, you could say. When it was complete and moved into his manor, he was still a bachelor, so he had the room with the bed closed off. Years went by, and he was no longer young, no longer believed he would find the woman to share that bed with him, or his life, his home, to make a family with him. Sounds like an unlucky bed to me.
Well, wait for the rest. One day, it seems, he walked through his forest, as he often did, and came upon a woman sitting on the banks of his stream. Not the young beauty he'd once envisioned as his bride, but a handsome woman who engaged his mind, one who lived in a pretty cottage not far from the manor. Considering, Eve scooped up some heavily doctored oatmeal. He should have run into her before. I mean, how many people lived around there? And, well, he didn't run into her before, did he? Maybe if he'd gotten out and about more on his own land, he'd have found that bride. With a shake of his head, Rourke sampled the eggs. Maybe it was meant for that time and place. In any case, he continued, before she could interrupt with logic again, they met and conversed, and began to walk together now and then over that spring and into the summer. He learned she'd been widowed barely a month after she'd wed her young man, and had never wed again. They talked of her garden and his business, and the gossip and politics of the day, and fell in love and lived happily ever after. Rourke shot her the look he often shot the cat. It was a friendship they forged, a good, strong one, and the man never thought of love over that year, for he believed that time for him had passed. But he valued her, her person, her mind, her manner, her humor. So he told her, and asked if she wanted to marry, and they'd be companions for the rest of their days. When she agreed, he was content, but never thought to open the room or use the bed he'd once had made. But it was to that room she led him on their wedding night, and the bed gleamed in the moonlight, and spring, this new one, came through the windows. The linens, fresh and white, and flowers from her own cottage garden in vases, the candles lit. And in her, he saw the bride he'd once imagined. Not the young beauty, but the woman, the substance, the constancy, the wit, and the kindness. And in this marriage bed, friendship, strong and true, became a strong and true love. Now it said that those who share this bed will know the same. A pretty story. Obviously bullshit, but pretty. So Eve nodded. We're definitely keeping the bed. And she realized she'd eaten the stupid oatmeal without thinking about it. What color is that? The cover on it. It's bronze, a hint of copper. She nodded again, polishing off her bacon. It looks like the same color and fabric thing as my wedding dress. Because it is. Sap. That's twisted sap, I'll remind you. I like the color, and the bed. So that's a start. As do I. So I'll have Charmaine work from there. Good enough. She rose, went to her closet. It's to be colder today, he warned her. Likely sleeting before afternoon. Peachy. She stuck her head back out. Why isn't it apple-y, or melony, or just fruity? He studied her, his cynical and often literal wife. Simply shrugged. I've never given it a thought and couldn't say. Exactly. She vanished inside again. I'm hitting the morgue first, then the lab. I have to use Dickhead. Apparently he's the laser king. She grabbed a dark green sweater, warm brown trousers. As she reached for a jacket, it occurred to her if she picked wrong, Rourke would get up and get another one for her. So she took another minute, then 2 minutes studying her choices. Why did she have so many? Why did it seem there were more choices every time she walked in here? No one was more surprised than she was when she pulled out a jacket a few shades darker than the trousers that had that dark green subtly woven through. She snagged boots, a belt,
considered it done. "I'll be in Midtown most of the day," he told her when she came out to dress. "I have a walkthrough at Ondeaton this afternoon." She thought of the youth shelter he'd built. "How's that going?" "We'll see with this walkthrough, but it's been going very well. We should be able to take residence in by April."
"Good."
She hooked on her weapon harness, shrugged into the jacket, then sat to pull on the boots. Caught his glance.
"What? What's wrong with these clothes?"
"Absolutely nothing. You look perfect and completely a cop."
"I am completely a cop."
"Precisely. You're completely my cop, so have a care." He sat, finishing his coffee, the cat sprawled beside him, and he smiled at her in just that way. She went to him, caught his face in her hands, kissed him.
"I'll see you tonight."
"Catch the bad guys, Lieutenant, but stay safe doing it."
"That's the plan."
She found her coat, the snowflake hat she'd become weirdly attached to, a made-by-Peabody scarf, and fresh gloves on the newel post. Her car, heater running, waited outside. She glanced in the rearview mirror once at the warmth and comfort of home, then headed out to the morgue and the dead. The sleet didn't wait for afternoon and started to fall, mixed with snapping little bits of ice by the time she fought her way downtown. That didn't stop the ad blimps blasting about cruise wear, white sails, inventory clearances, but it did cause the already lumbering maxi buses to slow to a crawl. And since even the thought of winter precipitation caused the majority of drivers to lose any shred of competency they might own, she spent most of her trip avoiding, leapfrogging over, and cursing every cab and commuter. The long white tunnel leading to the dead came as a relief, even when she passed an open door and heard someone's cackling laugh. To her mind, no one should cackle in the dead house. The occasional chuckle, fine, but cackling was just creepy. She pushed through the doors to the autopsy room, into the cool air and the quiet strains of classical music. The three victims lay on slabs, almost side by side. Morris had a protective cloak over his steel-gray suit. He wore a royal blue shirt that picked up the needle-thin lines in the suit jacket and had twined cord of the same color through the complex braid of his dark hair. Micro-goggles magnified his eyes as he glanced up from the body of Alyssa Wyman.
"A cold, dreary morning to start our day.
It's probably gonna get worse."
"It too often does. But for our guests, the worst is over. She made me think of Mozart."
He ordered the music down to a murmur as he lifted the goggles.
"So young."
He'd already opened her and gestured with a sealed hand smeared with blood toward his screen.
"She was healthy, had exceptional muscle tone. I see no signs of illegals or alcohol abuse. She had a hot chocolate, soy milk, chocolate substitute, and a soft pretzel about an hour before death. A snack before she hit the ice.
They have carts selling that kind of thing right outside the park. She'd been skating just under 25 minutes before she took the hit.
Laser strike, mid-back, almost severing the spine between the T6 and T7, thoracic vertebrae."
"Yeah, I got that."
"Severing?" "Very nearly. So this was a high-powered strike. Had she survived it, she would have been a paraplegic without a long, expensive, and brilliant treatment. But with the intensity of the strike, she would have been gone in seconds."
"The classic never knew what hit her."
"Exactly so. And a blessing, as, though I've only begun on her internal organs, I see considerable damage." She might not have been big on internal organs, but Eve had passed squeamish in autopsy long ago. So she accepted the goggles Morris offered, took a closer look. Am I looking at massive internal bleeding? You are, with a burst spleen, as was her liver. He gestured to his scale where that particular organ sat. Are internal injuries like this usual with a laser hit? I've seen it before, but it's more common in combat injuries, where the enemy is intent on destroying as many opponents as quickly as possible. The beam pulses, like vibrates, once it hits the target, right? Straightening, Eve took off the goggles. I've heard of this. It's outlawed in police weaponry. In collections? I believe so, yes. This would be Berensky's area. Yeah, I heard that. He's my next stop. After setting the goggles aside, Eve studied Wyman's body, turned to the two waiting for Morris. So somebody got their hands on a military weapon or adapted another to military level. And somebody wanted to make sure these three people went all the way down. It's difficult to see why anyone would want to end this young woman's life. Of course, she may have been a stone bitch with a wait list of enemies. Doesn't look like it. Solid family. Still lived at home, doing the work-college thing, with the ice skating a big passion. As she spoke, Eve circled the body. A young, slender girl who'd never known what hit her. She was still friendly with her ex-boyfriend. I took a look through her room yesterday when I notified the parents. On the girly side, but not crazy with it. No hidden stashes, no weird shit on her electronics, though EDD will take a harder look there. A normal, sort of not-quite-adult, who hadn't yet determined what to do with her life, and assumed she had all the time in the world to figure it out. That's how I see it, Eve agreed. Right now, anyway. Her family's going to contact you about seeing her. I spoke with them last evening. They'll be in mid-morning. I'll take care of them. I know you will. Turning away from Wyman, Eve studied the other victims. If there was a specific target, I think it was the second victim. Michelson. Yeah, but that's just theory, just gut. I've got nothing to hang it on. As your gut's generally reliable and in much better shape than Michelson's, I'll keep that in mind when I examine him. He knew what hit him. According to the wits who tried to help him, he was conscious, alive, at least for a minute or two. An agonizing minute or two, Morris added, nodding. That would be part of the reason for your gut on him. Part of it. I noted in your report you're consulting with Lowenbaum. I'll copy him on all findings. Affirmative. How many LDSK investigations have you worked? This would be my third, and first as Chief ME. With his own goggles lowered, he gave her a friendly look out of long dark eyes. I've got, what, about 10 years on you? I don't know. Do you? He smiled at her, knowing that, especially for a cop, she took great care not to intrude in the personal business or into the personal data of colleagues. Roughly 10, which makes us both a bit young for any real memories of the urbans, when such things were all too common. Technology that creates the weapons used on these three people increases what we'll call the science of the kill, and restrictions on those weapons decrease the accessibility and the use of them for that purpose. But sooner or later, yes, sooner or later. I don't know a great deal about this sort of weapon, but I'll learn. He looked down at Alyssa again. So we can do our best for her and the others. I'll go see if Dickhead knows as much about laser weapons as Loenbaum says he does. Good luck. Oh, Garnet tells me you're having drinks.
What? Who?
De Winter.
Oh, De Winter.
Dr. De Winter, Eve thought. Forensic anthropologist. Smart, a little annoying. We're friends, Dallas, without any added benefits. Uneasy, Eve stuck her hands in her pockets.
Not my business.
You were there for me when I lost Amaryllis, and being there helped me through the darkest days of my life. So while it might not be your business, I understand it's your concern. We like each other's company, particularly without the tension of will there be sex. In fact, she and Chael and I had dinner last night.
The priest, the dead doctor, and the bone doctor.
Now he laughed, and Eve felt herself relax. Quite the trio when you look at it that way. In any case, she mentioned she'd talked you into having a drink.
Maybe. Sometime.
At his arched eyebrows, she hissed.
Yeah, okay. I owe her for cutting through a lot of red tape. Did she put you up to poking me on it?
He only smiled. You'll see her at Bella's party.
How'd she get into Mavis's kids deal?
When it comes to poking, Mavis is a charming expert. She gives me one every few weeks just to make sure I'm not wallowing. The four of us went to the Blue Squirrel a couple weeks ago.
You went to the Blue Squirrel? On purpose?
It's an experience. In any case, she and Leonardo invited Garnet and her daughter to the party. It promises to be quite the event.
You say that like it's a good thing. I worry about you, Morris.
Fairly serious about that. She left him with the dead.
She was nearly at the exit when Peabody came in, pink-cheeked from the cold and wearing her fussy-topped pink winter boots. I'm not late. You're early.
I wanted to jump on it. As Eve walked straight out, Peabody did a quick turnaround and followed.
Did Morris have anything?
He was working on the first victim. We need to corroborate with Berensky, but it looks like a military-grade weapon.
McNabb started researching those last night.
Peabody hustled to the car, let out an audible, ah, as she settled into the seat.
He was totally all about it. What is it with men and weapons?
I'm not a man. I like weapons.
Right. Anyway, he was researching the weapon, or possible weapon, and started doing the math. The math I get, because geek. Then you sent over that program Rourke wrote up. It was like Christmas and hot sex and chocolate pudding for him all together. Like having hot sex covered with chocolate pudding on Christmas.
Ooh. Don't go there.
Already did, but saving it for later. So, he's playing with that, and I started on the wit list. Like I said in my report, the poor little guy with the broken leg and his parents didn't see a thing until they hit the ice. Then all they really saw was the kid and the girl. It happened so fast. They were about to exit the rink when it happened. We're looking the other way, and bam!
We'll finish the list, but it's not going to come down to wits at the rink on this. The strike came from too far away. I haven't found any connection between the victims, and I don't think there's going to be any.
If this was completely random...
Peabody glanced out at the people on the street, at the buildings, and all the windows rising up.
I didn't say I'm convinced it was random. I want Morris's full results, and we're going to start checking the buildings on the short list Rourke worked out. The first victim, middle of the back, high-powered strike with echoes.
I know what that means! McNabb ran it for me last night.
Echoes means the strike's designed to spread once it hits the target.
She wouldn't have survived it. At least low odds, anyway. Nearly severed her spine. So that tells me the kill was imperative, not just the strike. And maybe that's why he stopped at 3. Panic starting. People heading for cover or bunching up, ducking down. You're going to get some solid strikes, but maybe not solid enough for a kill. This way, he's 3 for 3. Don't take chances. Lower your percentage. Peabody blew out a breath as Eve turned toward the lab. How many buildings on the short list? Enough that I'm pulling in whoever's not working a hot to help check them out. Inside, in the warren of the lab, Eve headed straight for Dickhead. While most of the techs wore white lab coats, the slick of dark hair on his egg-shaped head made him easy to spot as he huddled over his long work counter. She imagined his spidery fingers working over a keyboard or on a screen. The man was a creepy pain in the ass, but he had skills, and she needed them. He glanced up as she approached and nearly knocked her off her stride. The poor excuse for facial hair he'd been trying to grow now resembled an anemic caterpillar over his mouth and a tattered spider web on his chin. If he'd developed the new look to lure women, and luring women was his greatest wish, Eve predicted brutal disappointment. LDSK, he said, with what might have been pleasure. That's right. We don't get those every day. Long-range laser rifle. Lowen bombs right on the model, I figure. It has to be military grade. Morris said the first Vic, as far as he'd gotten this morning, had damage to internal organs. Yeah, echoes. I figured it. He zipped down the counter on his stool, tapped a screen. See here? A CGI sim of a strike with a tactical XT, military grade. Laser beam in red. Range here is 1,000 yards. Trigger to strike, 1.3 seconds. See how the red hit the body? How the strike pinpoints, then spreads? That's your echo. See, it hits, then it blooms. He lifted his hands, upturned, palms cupped, then drew them apart. You ain't walking away from that. I have 3 people in the morgue who didn't walk away from that. You're on the dead. I'm on the weapon. ME says military grade. Echoes. That caps that for me, as that's what I'm seeing on the security feed. Talked with Lowenbaum and we're agreed on it. I'm not arguing it. He just waved that away. You gotta figure the range of a military-grade TAC XT is, known record, 3.6 miles. I got that, Berensky. I need, in the right hands, these strikes could have been made from a barge in the frickin' East River. You gotta get that. But I want to meet the son of a bitch who could make that strike in New York, considering sight lines, wind variance, temperature, not to mention the movement of the targets. When I nail the son of a bitch, I'll introduce you. I'll hold you to it. But I don't figure we're talking full range, okay? I'm working on narrowing it. Working on a program to narrow it down, given the angles, speed, and so on. I've narrowed it down. I've got a program. The one we've used isn't, I've got a new program. He stopped waving her away, scowled at her instead. What program? Peabody, I've got it here on my PPC. And now, she said after a few commands, it's on your unit. He ran it through once, hunched forward, ran it through a second time. Where'd you get this? NSA? Rourke. Huh. How long's he had people working on this? Just Rourke. Last night. He swung around on his stool. You bullshitting me? What for? I got 3 people dead, for God's sake. This is frickin' genius. Running it yet again, Berensky rubbed the back of his neck. I can see it could use a little fine-tuning. Don't mess with it.
I ain't gonna mess with it. I'm saying if he or his people fine-tuned it, he could sell it for...
Guess he doesn't need to. It's not about need, she muttered.
You show this to Lohenbaum?
I sent it to him, but it was late last night. He may not have seen it yet. When he does, he's gonna say same as me. You got as close to accurate as you're going to.
See here, he calculated the wind variance at the time of the strikes. Temperature, humidity, the angle of the strikes, the time between, the elevation, the sight line. It's all here.
You're going to be humping for weeks clearing these buildings, but you've got a solid direction. Take out mid to high level security buildings. Eve glanced at Peabody again.
Can I?
Without waiting, Peabody leaned over the counter, took the program to the next phase.
Sweet. Yeah. Hard to get that kind of weapon through security.
For now, eliminate multi-person offices, residences with families. He nodded as more buildings faded.
Okay. If he didn't use a suppressor, you're gonna find somebody who heard 3 high-pitched discharges. Have you ever heard a laser rifle?
I've fired one.
Then you know. If he did use one, that would cut the range a bit, but nobody heard anything. It's going to depend how he wanted to go, that's all. You're sure as hell after somebody who knew what they were doing. That's skill, Dallas. Serious skill. That last strike? That wasn't only skill, that was fucking cocky.
Though it pained her a little to agree with Dickhead, Eve had thought the same. Cocky gets sloppy.
Maybe.
Work with the program, and if you can eliminate any more areas, I need to know. Since he was already running the program again, she left him to it.
You didn't have to threaten or bribe him.
Because I gave him geek porn and he's having too much fun. Eve had to admit to herself, she kind of missed the bribe dance.
4.
Eve drove straight to Cop Central. She needed to set up her board, snag whoever she could to start clearing buildings, and she hoped to slide in a quick consult with Mira. It would mean battling Mira's hard-eyed admin, but a consult with the NYPSD's top profiler and shrink was invaluable. The minute she stepped into the bullpen, she scanned. No Baxter and Trueheart, which told her they were likely in the field. The way Carmichael sat on the edge of Santiago's desk indicated a consult rather than gossip. Jenkinson scowled at his comp as he worked, and Reinicke strolled out from the break room with a mug of cop coffee.
Nothing hot? She asked Jenkinson.
Paperwork. I lost the flip.
My office in 5. Peabody, catch them up.
In her office, she opened Rourke's program, then set up her board, centering the 3 victims. To circumvent Mira's dragon, she sent a brief email to Mira directly. A text might hit the admin first. She stood, real coffee in hand, and studied the screen when Jenkinson and Reinicke came in. She'd have sworn the light changed in the glare of Jenkinson's tie. From his standpoint, she supposed the gold and green dots on screaming red struck him as classic, even subtle.
You're gonna start in this sector. Work east from Madison. Peabody's gonna give you the target buildings based on this program. It's a crapshoot.
Sniper type, Reinicke said. You figure working alone.
Most likely. I'm working on a consult with Mira, but going with percentages and probabilities, a single male, military or police training, a loner. You don't make these strikes without training and practice, so you hit wits on that. At hotels, flops, you're looking for somebody who came in light. He'd need the carrying case for the weapon, but I don't see him hauling around much more. He'd need a window that opened, or he damaged it to make the strike. He'd want privacy screening. Unsuppressed, a weapon like this emits a whine. 3 strikes, 3 whines, rapid succession.
Odds of somebody hearing that?
Next to zilch, Eve said with a nod to Jenkinson. Maybe in a flop or a low-rent apartment, someplace with no soundproofing.
And of finding somebody who gives a crap when a cop asks.
And that, Eve agreed.
Could have used his own place, Reinecke speculated. Starts obsessing on the rink for whatever fucked up reason, decides to do some duck hunting.
Let's find out. Peabody and I will start at the sector farthest east, work in toward you. We'll probably be an hour behind you. We need to hit the second Vic's office, and...
She broke off as her incoming signaled, turned to her desk.
Okay, Mira's just coming into Central, and she'll stop by here. If she adds anything we can use, you'll hear it. Get going. Peabody, refine our list geographically, and contact Michelson's office. Tell them we're coming in to interview.
She checked her wrist unit.
I want a quick one with Feeney before we head out. I can go to him.
I'm on it.
Alone, she stepped to her window, looked out. She'd judge herself a decent marksman with a laser rifle. Better, a lot better, with a hand weapon, but okay with a long one. And calculating, figured she could kill, maim, or injure an easy dozen from her skinny office window within a minute.
How the hell did you protect anyone?
She turned back as she heard Mira coming. Those quick clicks that indicated some sort of classy heels. The classy heels were on classy red booties in some sort of textured pattern that matched a skinny and useless belt on a suit in what, for some reason, they called winter white. Mira's soft sable hair curved in a smooth bob today that showed off little earrings where a tiny pearl dripped from a red stone.
How did anybody think clearly enough in the morning to coordinate that exactly and not look like a fashion droid but accessibly human?
Thanks for stopping, Eve began.
The price is some of that coffee. I was going to tap you for tea, but then I smelled your coffee.
Mira set aside her coat, her purse, white with a surprisingly bold red center stripe, and stepped to Eve's board.
I saw the media reports and read your report. Still no discernible connection among the victims except being on the skating rink.
None, and only a few people knew the third victim would be there, and even that's vague on timing.
Killers of this type often choose randomly. The who doesn't matter. It's the kill itself, the panic it causes. A public place from a distance.
Thank you, Mira added as Eve passed her the coffee.
The three are diverse. Two men, one girl. The two men straddled two generations in age. One was alone, one part of a couple. It isn't a particular type of target, which again leans random.
The first and third would have been dead instantly, or close enough. First in the spine, nearly severing it. Third headshot. But the second, mid-body, and he was conscious for at least a minute or two, bleeding out. One in three didn't know what hit them. Two did.
I see. And that leads you to suspect the second victim was target-specific.
That, and the fact the shooter had to be set up for this in advance, and the third victim's presence wasn't set in stone. The first victim, it's just long odds seeing her as target-specific. Unless we go back to pure random. The red outfit, the skill on the ice.
All right.
Mira leaned a hip against Eve's desk.
You already know he's organized, skilled, a planner, which means controlled, at least situationally. To add to that, the purely random LDSK has a grudge against society or a political agenda, an anger at a kind of place, a military base, a school, a church. The goal would be to kill or injure as many as possible, to cause panic and alarm, and often to die as a martyr for the cause that drives him. As many as possible. These strikes took serious skill, and he only takes 3? I keep coming back to that, Eve said. So I'm low on the anger or grudge against the place when he stopped at 3. In about 12 seconds, that's all it took. And yeah, suicide by cop or self-termination after the damage is done. But not this guy, at least not yet.
He may not be finished with that agenda or grudge.
Yeah, Eve blew out a breath. Yeah, I keep coming back to that, too.
I agree with your leanings toward a more specific target or targets due to the low body count.
Studying death as Eve did, Mira sipped her coffee.
And now, with the strike on the second victim not being instantly fatal as were the others? If he meant the second victim to suffer, that adds more weight.
It could just be the nature of the strike, given the distance, the movement, but it sticks out for me.
If the victim was specific, the killer chose this public arena, killed others to cover the specificity, and chose a difficult kill. We both know there are much more direct and simple ways to end a life, but the method is part of the purpose and pathology. He's not just skilled, but the skill is part of his self-worth, his ego.
There you go, Eve murmured, adding that to the picture she needed to build in her head.
I would say causing panic, causing the media fury, was certainly part of the motive. Also, the distance, not just the skill involved, but the actual distance, adds dispassion. A target, not a human being. As a military sniper must think, or a professional assassin.
I haven't eliminated a pro, but it's low on my list. And if it's a pro, who hired him and why? It goes back to why these 3? And for my gut, why Michelson?
He was a doctor.
Yeah, woman doctor deal. Checking the works, delivering babies and like that.
All right. You might check on mortality. A patient who didn't survive treatment, or a woman who died in childbirth, a baby who didn't survive. It's extremely rare, but it happens, particularly in emergency situations, or if the patient went against medical advice.
Cross that with someone connected to her. Spouse, lover, brother, father. Eve nodded, adding to the picture. Or rare, but not impossible, we're dealing with a female shooter. If we draw those lines, this could be it. Why kill again? Except...
it went so very well, didn't it?
Eve looked back at her board. Yeah, really good day. We're heading to Michelson's office now. Maybe we'll hit something. Otherwise,
you expect another strike.
If there's an agenda, he's already chosen the next location and scouted out his nest. You want panic, media fury? Hit again and fast. Keep the momentum going.
I have to agree.
If he sticks with 3, that's going to tell me 3 means something to him. Otherwise, he'll take out more next time. It's ego, right?
Yes, ego plays a part.
When it plays too big a part, it leads to mistakes. Maybe he's already made one. I just have to find it. I should get started. I appreciate the time.
And I the coffee.
Mira handed the empty cup back to Eve, smiled.
I love that jacket.
This? Since she'd already forgotten what she was wearing, Eve looked down.
I love those earthy tones. I can't wear them, but they're so perfect for you. I don't want to keep you, Mira said as she gathered up her things.
I'm available when you need me on this. And I want to add, we're looking forward to Bella's party. It'll be so good for Dennis. That kind of color and joy.
Eve shuffled the actual party out of her mind. How's he doing?
He'll grieve for the cousin he loved, even though that man ceased to exist, if he ever did, long before his death. But he's doing well. I was going to nudge him into taking a trip, a little time for us away, but realized he needs home and routine right now. So the party adds to it. What's happier than a first birthday party?
I could make a list. On a laugh, Mira shook her head.
Good luck today.
With Peabody, Eve drove back toward Midtown and Michelson's practice right off Fifth Avenue at East 64th. A healthy walk to the rink, she thought, and an easy walk to his residence only a couple blocks away on 61st. She accepted the challenge of finding a parking slot, vertical lifted into a tight second level on the street. Peabody didn't breathe until the car clunked into place. Then she cleared her throat. Office manager is Marta Beck. In addition, he has a receptionist, a billing clerk, a physician assistant, a midwife, two nurses, and a pair of part-time rotating nurses' assistants. Good-sized staff for one doctor. He's been in this location for 22 years and does a stint at the local free clinic twice a month. Together they walk down, clanging on the metal steps, to street level, while sleet slickened every surface. Basic background shows a good rep professionally and nothing that pops out personally. On the main door of the trim townhouse was a simple plaque that read Dr. Brent Michelson, and beneath his was one that read Faith O'Reilly. O'Reilly's the midwife, Peabody said as Eve stepped inside the quiet, surprisingly homey reception area. The area was occupied by three pregnant women, one with a toddler perched on what was left of her lap, a thin woman in her mid-20s who looked bored as she scrolled through her PPC, and a couple who huddled together, hands clasped. Eve went straight to the reception counter and, considering all the hormones in the room, kept her voice low. Lieutenant Dallas, Officer Peabody, to see Marta Beck. The receptionist, a pretty woman with skin the color of melted gold, bit her lip. Her eyes filled.
If you'd come through the door on the right, please.
She swiveled in her chair to speak to a man in a blue lab coat.
George, would you tell Marta her appointment is here?
The man had eyes the same color as his coat. He didn't bite his lip as his eyes filled, but pressed them together and slipped away. The door led to a corridor with exam rooms, the sort of rooms that always tightened the muscles of Eve's stomach. The receptionist stepped into the corridor.
I'll show you back. We, all of us, we're... It's a hard day.
You didn't close.
No, we have Dr. Spicker taking Dr. Michelson's patients, and Ms. O'Reilly seeing hers and others. We're going to try to see everyone who's booked. Dr. Michelson and Dr. Spicker were talking about Dr. Spicker joining the practice, so Marta felt...
They passed an offshoot with a couple of chairs, counters with clipboards and tubes and cups, and a scale where someone else in a lab coat, with flowers all over it, weighed another pregnant woman. How long did Dr. Michelson know Dr. Spicker?
Oh, since Dr. Spicker was a boy. They're family friends, and Dr. Spicker just finished his residency. Marta, Ms. Beck's office is...
She trailed off as a tall, broad-shouldered woman in a black suit stepped out of a doorway. Thank you, Holly. She stuck out a hand. Marta Beck. Lieutenant Dallas. Eve accepted the brief shake. Detective Peabody, please come in.
Would you like some tea? I can't offer coffee. We don't have any in the offices.
We're fine.
Marta quickly closed the door. Please sit. Eve took one of the straight-backed chairs in the ruthlessly organized room. Not unfriendly, she supposed, with a couple of thriving green plants, a row of fancy teacups, even a small sofa with fancy pillows. But you knew business was king here. Marta sat behind her desk, folded her hands. Do you have any suspects? The investigation is ongoing. Did Dr. Michelson have any problems with anyone on staff? Any patients? Anyone you know of? Brent was well-liked. He was a good doctor, a caring one, and his patients loved him. We have some who've moved to Brooklyn, New Jersey, Long Island. They still come here because he forged relationships. The patient mattered, Lieutenant. The wall in our break room is covered with photos of the babies he helped bring into the world. Photos of them as they've grown up. I've worked for him for 20 years. He was a good doctor. And a kind man. She took a breath. I assumed, from the media reports, this was a random killing. Some lunatic. We're investigating all possibilities. I can think of no one, absolutely no one, who would have wished Brent dead. I'd tell you if I did. He was a friend, a good friend, as well as my employer. What will happen to his practice now? She sighed. It will go to Andy, Dr. Spicker, if he wants it. Brent discussed this with me while Andy was still a resident. Andy's parents were Brent's oldest friends. He's Andy's godfather and has been his mentor. They're all very close. Brent felt he himself could begin to cut back if and when Andy wanted to join the practice, and he felt he'd leave the practice in good hands with Andy, and with Faith, our midwife, when he decided to retire or to simply travel more. Any doctor, however good, whose practice for a couple decades has losses. Of course. Losses can cause loved ones to behave irrationally. Of course, she said again. Several years ago, Brent had a patient who lost her child, miscarried in her 7th month after her partner beat her severely. He left her unconscious on the floor, and by the time she came to, was able to contact 911, it was too late. The man who caused this threatened Brent when he was tried, when Brent testified. But that man was himself killed in prison 2 years ago. I assume that's the sort of thing you mean. I do. What about the woman who had the miscarriage? She came back to Brent 2 years later when she conceived again with a very nice young man she married shortly after. They have a lovely daughter. Her photo's on the wall, and the mother remains a patient. There are a few others, and like any medical practice, we've dealt with malpractice suits. But as far as an actual threat, that's the only one I know of. Any recent firings? Issues with employees? None. It can be a challenging practice to manage, as Brent tended to spend more time with patients than the industry norm. I learned years ago to factor in more time between appointments. Adding a PA, 8 years ago now, has helped cut back on the wait time. And plans to bring Andy on would have helped even more. But that's a moot point, isn't it? She looked away for a moment. I have to hold the line here. We can't fall apart. I've never experienced this kind of thing before. Loss, yes. Everyone's lost someone. But not like this. I can't wrap my head around it. I know you need answers, but I don't have them. I just can't think of anyone at all, who'd want to do this to Brent. Despite the office manager's sensibilities, Eve took the time to speak with everyone on staff. When she felt she'd wrung that area dry, she walked out into sleet. "Maybe I'm off," she said to Peabody. "I'm off, and Michelson was as random as the other two. Wrong place, wrong time.
I get why you're tugging that line."
"But," Eve prompted as they climbed up to the car.
"Well, the third Vic almost has to be random. But if I wanted to zero in on one of the others, I'd go with the first."
"Why?"
"Jealousy factor. Young, really pretty, really talented, and, in her way, flashy. Some asshole she didn't pay enough attention to or shut down. And she was first. If I were going to take that kind of shot, I'd want to be sure my primary target went down."
"Reasonable points."
"Take her."
"Take her?"
"Turn her inside out," Eve said. "Work, family, school, friends. Find her pattern. Where she ate, shopped, what route she usually took. Subway, bus, walking. Talk to her family again.